I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
Hello, Patrick. Everybody, this is John. Today, we're joined by Dave Robeson, and he's got a brand spanking new project to tell us about today. We've had Dave on the show a couple times before. He's a great friend. He's had both of us on his shows, and we love him. He's one of our favorite people on the internet. Dave, welcome.
You guys are also my favorite people on the internet, and it's always a delight to be back in the Functional Nerds virtual studios. It's always a very affirming thing when I return. It means that my nerd cred is still intact, and that's important to me.
Well, Dave, why don't you tell us about this new project that you have?
I would be delighted. And the project is called Archivos. And it's spelled Archivos. It's a story development application. At its heart, that's what it's intended for. At least that's what it started out as. The idea is that storytellers can go in and not only detail the various story elements of their stories, like, you know, characters, places, events, items, so on and so forth, but they can also define the relationships between those elements. So you can say that this person is from this location, or this person owns this sword, or whatever. And through the document definition of those relations, the application allows the storytellers to actually see those relationships in a graphical interface. So you can see in a visual layout the connections between, we've been using Lord of the Rings fairly prominently. You can see the connections between Aragorn and Frodo and Boromir. And in this single display, you can literally see the associations and connections across almost your entire story setting. And that's just one of the three different displays. There's a living map display where the storyteller can upload a map and then place on that map all of the cool events and locations and regions of your story setting. And then you can click on those when the display goes up. You can then click on those and see the detailed information about it, see what they're connected to, and see this network of connectivity across your whole setting. And then the third setting is the timeline, which is, of course, a chronological breakdown of your story setting. So your events are scrolled out from left to right, left being the past, right being the future. And each event that the storyteller documents shown in chronological order, and you can click on it, and then you can see the details of the event, who was involved, where did it take place. Whole experience is represented in the app. And initially, we intended this to be a tool to help, you know, develop a story, see those connections, you know, chronologically, geographically, and just in terms of personal relations. That's a huge asset for storytellers in terms of continuity across their stories. But then as we started developing these displays, it's like, as a fan, I would love to be able to go into my favorite stories and be able to see that layout, see those connections, and see that information. So it's become kind of a story development and a presentation tool. So that's the essence of what Archivos is. It allows storytellers to document relationships, display them in this interactive visual framework.
Now, Dave, this sounds like a pretty technical thing. Did you have someone, like an engineer on board to help develop this?
Actually, I ended up hiring a design studio in order the software itself. It was just far too vast for me to even attempt on my own. And I'm so grateful I did. These guys have been incredible. The studio is gun.io. is the name of the company, and they've been incredible in terms of both developing it and also helping define the direction and how it's going to be implemented.
That sounds great. Yeah, it sounded like a big, it didn't sound like something that you can whip up in WordPress on a weekend yourself, I imagine.
No, no, this isn't one of those part-time knock it out in the background kind of things. This is, it's astonishing how this project has developed over time, just because the applications for it, while it started out as very, you know, I'm all about the story and the storytelling community and the creative community. And that was my initial emphasis, my initial vector into the experience of Archivos. But as we started playing with it, we started realizing things like, well, it doesn't just have to be fictional stories like, you know, Brandon Sanderson or Patrick Rothfuss. You can go into classics. You can go into Shakespeare. You can go into, you know, Steinbeck and document and detail those stories in this framework, which immediately opens up the possibility for educators to use Archivos to help teach these classics of literature. And the additional window opened up. Then it was, but, you know, history is basically just a story that actually happened. So now Archivos can be a tool to teach the Renaissance or the American Revolutionary War or the Bauhaus art movement, the civil rights movement, whatever era of time. Every slice of history has characters, locations, events. And so consequently, literally everything in human history can be documented and explored through Archivos. So I'm glad that I went through a development studio so that I have a solid technical foundation to build on, because the possible applications for this tool are mind-blowing, at least for me. So that's the foundation that we're building from.
So hold nice. On, John. So Dave, last night, Giles and I were talking a little bit about this, Giles from Beyond the Trope, and he was really excited about the educational possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. So are we. Yeah. Yeah. Giles and the Beyond the Trope crew are awesome. But yeah, we're the thing that really is boggling my mind, if it just between us three, and the internet, this is turning into something far bigger than I had ever anticipated. And it's really been a paradigm shift out of my comfort zone, because up to this point, I've been able to know my community, you know, through the Roundtable podcast. Lots of people tune in. I know most of them, even peripherally. This is evolving into something that's going to extend far beyond that. We have a website for Archivos at archivos.digital, archivos.digital. And people can sign up for the newsletter there. And for the first 2 weeks it was up, look, Bob signed up. That's nice. Cool. Oh, there, Mary signed up. Awesome. But for the last 3 weeks
Mary.
Or so, I know, right? But I'm seeing names that I don't know, that I have no idea how they found out about this. And that's just going to escalate from there. And the notion of building something that's going to reach so far beyond my intimate network of association is kind of mind-blowing and unsettling in a good way, but still to the point where I'm just, every now and then there's this moment of stark deer in headlights. Oh my God, what am I doing?
Awesome. Well, I definitely want to break into more with that. Before we do that, I want to mention, if you dig the show, dig hearing stories from guys like Dave here, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick and I would like to take this moment to thank all the people who already back us. It really means a lot to us, and we appreciate your continued support. And if you aren't doing it, consider doing it. If you do $1 a month, that helps us out a lot. So again, patreon.com/functionalnerds. Now let's go on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Dave, why don't you tell us what your pick this week is?
this may have been called out previously, but it's something I just a podcaster who is coordinating schedules across multiple time zones and trying to find out when everyone is available. It is invaluable. It's called Doodle. It's doodle.com. It's absolutely free of charge. And you basically set up an event and list out the times that you're available, send the link to the people that you're trying to coordinate, and they can go in and say, these are the times I'm available. And you just pull from the Venn diagram. Oh, look, everybody's available from 2 to 3 on Sunday afternoon. Awesome. That's when we'll do our thing. But you know, it's so simple. It's one of those so very simple internet technologies that's like, why didn't somebody do it before? And it's like, there it is. So that's my pick. It's already been incredibly helpful in terms of coordinating with beta testers for Archivos, with guests for the Roundtable, which has been rebranded the Archivos Podcast Network, but it's still the Roundtable. And I highly recommend it for anybody else.
We use Doodle at Pikes Peak Writers for our volunteer kind of stuff and the board meetings and all that, just to get everybody on the same schedule. Yeah, it's pretty handy, and it's stupid simple.
That's nice, because a little behind the scenes stuff here. That happens to us more than we'd care to admit. How we'll Patrick and I will be waiting for a guest. They'll be like, I thought you said it was 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Time zones, the bane of my existence.
They usually blame their publicist. That's what I've noticed.
There you go.
Oh, the poor publicists.
Yeah, they usually get it. They're like, they didn't tell me. I even asked. I'm like, okay, it's okay. It's not a big deal. We'll work around it. It's okay. But that's a handy tool. It's something I will certainly look into for sure. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, since Dave went with essentially a productivity tool, I'm going to go with a productivity tool. It's a little bit different. It's something that I have started using at work. And I think all of us in our professional lives and in our day jobs have, you know, people who are breathing down our neck, and they want information from us, and they want us to provide the information. And, you know, as pretty a presentation as possible. And with that in mind, I started using something called Cyfe, CYFE.com. And if you've ever seen the show Silicon Valley, they actually used Cyfe. There's an episode where they have like TVs with numbers on them, and they're presenting things, and they're like, these TVs are all throughout their little offices, and they've got all these little displays, and it's showing like how many people have downloaded the app and stuff like that. That's Cyfe. And it's this tool that it's a website you can sign up for free, and you can build a dashboard, or you can pay and you can build multiple dashboards. And it will plug into, as an example, it'll plug into your Twitter account, your Facebook account, your LinkedIn account. It will plug into your Google Analytics. It'll plug into your WordPress site. It plugs into dozens, if not hundreds, of different kinds of pieces of software that are out there on the web. Plus, it will let you do things like Google Sheets, Google Drive. It'll plug into your documents there. It'll plug into your, if you have Excel spreadsheets like Dave, you know, you can do a CSV, push that up, do a custom thing there. It will create all these charts, displays, graphs, anything like that that you want that makes data look pretty. You can do with this, and then build this nice little dashboard that you can then display and show to people, or send them a link, or create a PDF, and it's all real-time data, or you could do little snapshots. And I'm kind of using that at work now to show how are we doing as far as web traffic, how's our social profile doing, how are we doing on, you know, conversions on leads on our website, all that kind of stuff that I can pull and aggregate in one spot. And it's really cool.
Wow. That's huge.
And again, stupid simple. It's basically, oh, I want to plug into Google Analytics. Okay. Add a widget, Google Analytics. I want to pull my conversion rates, and I want to do it year over year. And then I hit accept, and it basically pulls it up and shows me a nice little display.
SYFE.com?
C as in Charlie. YFE.com. Cyfe.
Nice. That sounds really
noted.
Cool.
And yeah. even the paid version, I think, is only like $19 a month.
That's good. You know, those tools are invaluable sometimes. Yep. So it's really worth it, especially if your boss is paying for it. So
yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're in a professional environment where you have to report on numbers and you have to show progress and how things are going, this is a great tool for you.
Cool. My pick this week, I'm going to go out on a limb, Patrick. It's a book. I'm going to say this is a must buy for you. This is right in your wheelhouse, this book. It's the latest book by Ryan Holiday, who is a nonfiction author. I've read most of his books at this point. I've become a big fan of his over the past few years. He's written a lot about Stoicism, which this has nothing to do with Stoicism, about Stoic philosophy and some other things. But by day, he is a marketer. He's got his own marketing company. Young guy, too. He's like 30 or 31. Don't you hate when those people are like 31, they already have 5 books published and their careers already happening?
They already know more than you do.
Wow. You know, thanks, John. You didn't just ruin my Saturday. You didn't depress me in any way. Yeah. You know, you didn't bring the whole world tumbling down on my shoulders. Nothing like that.
Yes. I'm sorry. But this book just came out a few weeks ago. I already read it, and it is called Perennial Seller: The Art of Making and Marketing Work That Lasts. And sometimes marketing books are a little, I don't know, they could be a little crass or, you know, it's not what you want. And this is not necessarily a marketing book. Half of the book focuses on how one goes about creating a work, whether it's a book or an album or a web development tool or a business, whatever it may be. The things that you should think about while you're creating whatever that is that will have it be a perennial seller. Not some flash in the pan thing, but something that will keep on selling as the years go on. So he talks a lot about that. And there's a lot of great examples from different authors. And he uses Iron Maiden as an example of an artist that has been a perennial, never had big hits, but still to this day, sell out arenas. He pointed out that on Spotify, their top 5 plays on Spotify are more than the top 5 plays of Madonna and the top 5 plays of, you know, all the big pop stars. Iron Maiden's top 5 songs on Spotify get more plays than that. And what did they focus on? And he goes into great detail. So a lot of great examples, different authors, all sorts of different things, goes through all of that. But then he gets really into the priorities that you should have in terms of how you put it out into the world, talking a lot about take the time, take the money to, let's say, for example, a book, get that cover as good as you can get it. Don't spend 2 years of your life writing a book or 5 years of your life writing a book and then slap something together in Photoshop on the weekend and put it out there.
So is he talking about self-publishing? Because if he's talking about traditional publishing, you as the author have zero control over the cover.
Well, that is true. But he's not necessarily talking about that. One of the things that he keeps getting back to is even if you are going through a traditional publisher, record company, whatever the case may be, ultimately, his point is that no one's going to care about this more than you are. And you have to fight at every step to make sure it's meeting those expectations. And look, sometimes you may not win that fight, as you said, because sometimes you may not have any control over your cover and they may slap a crappy cover on your book. There's all sorts of things too. And he talks about that too. He talks about luck as well. Goes through all the stuff. And then the last chapter is, hey man, sometimes you get lucky too. And that's a part of it too. But I think there's some really great insights into how to go about creating your work, how to go about packaging your work, and then how you go about marketing it. And he talks a lot about platform. He's got a whole chapter about platform, Patrick, and just really good insights. I think it's a really good book, and especially for, I think, many of the people in our audience who are writers, who are creative people, just things that you should think about, ways that you should approach every aspect of your project. And, you know, prioritizing correctly. And I just thought it was a great read, and I got out a lot out of it. And I think people listening would too.
That's awesome, John.
Well, and that speaks almost directly to what every artist is hoping for. I mean, there's always that success and revenue streams and audience count and size and so on and so forth. But speaking to something that lasts, I mean, that's every artist wants their work to sustain, to echo throughout history as a piece of work that touches as many people's lives as possible. That's why we're doing this. That sounds like a fascinating book, John. I'm totally putting that on my list. Especially now that I'm trying to build something that lasts. This is very pertinent for me.
And John, it reminds me of something. Have you ever actually met Dave personally, like in person?
I'm not sure. Possibly at a Balticon many moons ago. I haven't been to a Balticon in a while. Yeah.
So Dave is a big guy. He's a tall guy. You know, he's got the hat. He's got the mustache, and you know, he's just a big presence when you meet him in person. And he envelops you in this giant hug, and you know, he's that person. And I'll never forget when we met. You know, he gave me some advice that I've kept with me today. He said it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
That's all Dave too. That's all him. Patrick, one of the things
I may have made that up.
It's good advice, okay. Right? Yeah.
One of the things that he mentioned in his book, that this book by Ryan Holiday, which I think is really interesting, one of the best ways to promote your work is by creating more work. Mm-hmm. It's like your newer things will bring attention to your older things. And
sure.
That can be frustrating because everyone wants a slam dunk, you know, right when they release something. And unless you have a tremendous marketing budget behind you, that's usually not the way it works for most people. It's usually they're creating this body of work. And maybe after their fifth book, people go back and discover their first book. And that's the big thing that ends up, you know, getting them. But, or there's millions of examples, maybe not millions, but there's many, many examples of people's work becoming this perennial seller after the creator is dead. And that happens all the time, which isn't fun for most people to think about. Bach is probably the prime example. Bach was not Bach when he was alive. It wasn't until 100 years after he died that another composer, Mendelssohn, sort of started to popularize his work. And then he became the Bach that we know now. But during his lifetime, he wasn't Bach. So I know that's kind of frustrating. Yes. But it's that if you didn't want to create work that lasts, why would you even put it out? I guess is what it comes down to. So you should always have kind of what we were talking about with Rajan Khanna in a recent episode of, you know, you're not, and Patrick, you spoke a lot about this too. You're not writing for yourself. You're not writing fully for yourself.
You start that way. At first, yes. You're the first person that you're writing for is you, right? Because you have to love what you're writing, John. Otherwise you won't finish it. You won't continue with it. That's one of the things that there's a lot of advice out there that bugs the crap out of me. But one of the things that I do appreciate is you have to keep falling in love with what you're doing, because you have this initial, oh, this is the best idea I've ever had. I love this. I have to move forward with this. And then as you start to get into the work of it, it becomes a grind. And then you slack off a little bit and maybe you don't want to work on it anymore. And you have to remind yourself of what it was about that made you fall in love and want to write it in the first place. So you are the first person. But then eventually you have to realize that there's going to be an audience. There's going to be other people and they're going to interpret the work differently.
Yeah. And Dave, one of the things that they speak about in this book, they talk a lot about tech companies and these startups in Silicon Valley. And what you're doing now is, I don't know if you would describe it as a startup the way, you know, like a Twitter or something is, but it is a more technical thing. And one of the things that they talk about in this is that a lot of these companies fail because the head of the company, and Patrick mentioned Silicon Valley, and they talk about the guys in there with their product. And I watched the first couple seasons and they pivot from one thing to the next. And ultimately, your product has to serve somebody. It has to serve an audience. It has to be a tool for somebody. And unfortunately, some of these ideas are clever, but they're they're not for anybody. It's just for the person that's making it. It's a problem that they were having that they think everybody wants solved, that maybe it's of value, but it sounds like your tool is something that is, even in its early stages, is starting to find an audience of people who want to use it as a tool. So maybe you could speak to that a little.
Very much so. And that's gratifying. As we've, you know, if you go out to archivos.digital, we have some mock-ups of what the screens are going to look like. And apparently those alone are evocative enough to make people go, oh my God, I have to get on this. I have to use this. And, you know, I think absolutely agree with you, John, that there are a lot of ideas out there that are there for their own sake. Can we do this? Yes, we can. Does it actually serve anyone? Who cares? It's an idea, and let's just get it out there and see if it can happen. But I feel like the elements of Archivos, the capabilities of not just documentation but revelation. And I think that's the word that speaks most to me as far as what I discover as I'm working through these. Case in point, we're setting up a bunch of demos. We're going to be doing a pre-beta launch at Gen Con this year. So I'm setting up a lot of story settings to show people at the booth at Gen Con. And I was setting up Lord of the Rings. What a shock. You know, you always think Lord of the Rings. Well, that's Frodo's story. It's all about Frodo. But as I'm building all of the story elements and creating the relationships and character to that character in this location, blah, 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 it becomes very clear that that story is about Aragorn more so than Frodo, because Aragorn has all the connections, all the relationship, all the interactions. He runs a through line throughout the majority of that story, except for, of course, when Frodo go off into Mordor.
One does not really just walk into Mordor.
Yes, skulk, creep, flee, whatever. Yes, exactly. But it changed the way I look at the narrative of the story by mentation that so far, to my knowledge, only Archivos can provide. So my hope is that this new way of looking at your stories, this new way of experiencing the canon of a story, whether it's a fictional work that you're creating or a fan work. If you want to do a Harry Potter Archivos setting, you certainly can. We've got a guy who wants to use Archivos for his vlog. He does it's Jay Swanson. He does a daily vlog. The dude's living in Paris, and he walks around Paris every day and vlogs. He wants to use Archivos to set up each day's vlog event as an event set in a certain location with certain characters involved. And when I heard that, it's like, that's so weird and so perfect. Because he's telling a story. Any story can be framed in this framework. And what excites me the most is the fact that for as much as I've thought about this, what's going to astonish me in the years to come is all the different ways the users are going to apply this. Ways that I had never fathomed as a possibility. They're going to be using this, I hope, to break new ground for their own storytelling frameworks. And that discovery, that journey of taking this basic idea and then changing it, tweaking it, adapting it to all of the desires and all of the objectives that it can fulfill, that's going to be a huge adventure and very exciting for me.
So one of the things that a lot of people talk about, Dave, is platforms and like operating systems. So I know that our listeners are going to want to know, will they be able to use this on a Raspberry Pi? I'm just teasing.
Right now?
I'm just teasing. I'm assuming Windows and Mac.
Yeah, right now. God, killing me, Hester. right now, the Archivos platform is available online. It's a web-based application. So Windows and Mac in your browser, that's the experience.
Nice.
And you know, that's our first iteration. And there's a choice that every product creator must make of, do I wait until all the stuff is ready and then, or do I put out something that's really, really close and build from there? And that's a tough choice.
No, you do that. You build a stable platform, you put it out there, you get users working on it, and then you start doing releases of updates of information, and that continues to grow your user base and continues to make your users happy because you're giving them new features as they go.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, you know, from a business gets it out there and generating, you know, whatever trickle of nickels it's going to generate. But as you say, exactly. If you go too far down a developmental road and try and build everything, then making choices that your users could care less about.
Correct. You want user
Exactly. And especially with something as what I feel to be innovative and unique as the Archivos platform, you need to set that up in a way that put out as a basic, what they call a minimum viable product, and then let the users tell you what they want and build from there. So Archivos right now is just in the browsers. It doesn't even look good on a mobile. You know, if you loaded this up on your Safari, on your iPad, it's not going to look as good. And I feel badly about that, but those priorities of support for mobile, creating standalone apps, all of that stuff that's on the roadmap, this very, very long roadmap that's going to take us years into the future to do all the things I wanted to do, that's a top priority. Absolutely.
I can speak as a educator, as someone who works in an elementary school, and even though I'm a music teacher, I can think of some uses for it, but I know, thinking about my colleagues who teach fourth and fifth grade, and you know, they read their novels that they have to write their book reports on, and social studies class, and all these things, and how if you really are into education, how so much of it, how we should really be focusing a lot of energy on visual representations. The days of lecturing your class solely are over. You need you need visual components, and I say it's like you're already getting that feedback from people, but just from what you're describing, mm-hmm. I would definitely put some resources into the education part of it in terms of developing sort of specific education tools within it, or having education pricing and all that kind of thing, because I can really see people using that. I can really see my colleagues, you know, as they're going through their book that they're taking notes on, oh, hey, let's throw this up here and we'll put this on the computer and we'll put it up on the big screen in the TV and let's look at how these characters create. And I can really see some of my colleagues using something like this. So a little bit of feedback, even though you didn't ask for it.
bring it.
That education, I think, is a wing that you should definitely develop. I think there's a rich mine to mine.
I think any educator is going to jump at something that allows them to connect better with their students, and mm-hmm. and this could be that tool.
Exactly. And utilizing, you know, leveraging technologies to things like prescriptive pretests. They go in, they take the test, whatever they get wrong, we can point them directly to the Archivos or location or whatever on their questions and automatically start filling in the gaps on their knowledge. All of that is very much, it's near and dear to my own heart personally. And as you observed, it really is a natural fit for that sort of intuitive, interactive technology that is where contemporary education, I think, is going.
Now, the only question I have as far as the educators are concerned, Dave, is will your software have some sort of ability to connect to an overhead projector from the 1950s as used in modern day classrooms?
I can't make any technological promises in terms of legacy hardware support. Sorry, no.
Most classrooms have the smart boards now.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Well, I'm turning on everywhere. I don't. I'm the only classroom that doesn't have a smart board. They're like, yeah, the music teacher. You don't need that. That's fine.
You don't need a smart board.
You don't need any of that stuff. Go teach your lessons in the cafeteria. Be thankful you have a job. Okay, yeah. Well, Dave, that sounds great. I think our listeners are really going to dig that. So again, Archivos, check it out. Check out Dave. Dave, you mentioned that you're going to be at Gen Con as well. So everybody, if you're going to Gen Con
this week, as far as this episode goes.
Okay, so go if you're going to Gen Con, go and check out Dave. Any other cons you're going to be at, Dave, coming up?
For Archivos, not some Gen Con is going to be our big push. I personally will be at Gamehole Con in Madison, Wisconsin in November. And then, looking ahead from there, I know I'll be at Confusion in January up in Detroit, and I'll always be making the scene at Balticon. That's my homies are.
Yes.
So I'll be making that scene. As far as other places where Archivos is going to be, I just bought a gorgeous booth for Gen Con. I really kind of need to get my mileage worth out of that thing. So there will be other booths for Archivos. And if you stay state.digital and get signed up on the newsletter, I'll definitely be keeping everybody in the loop on that one.
Awesome. All right. Well, Dave, thank you for joining us this week. Once again, for us, dig the show. Consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick.
Well, as I mentioned last week, John, the story bundle, the Bump in the Night thriller bundle, is available through August 16th. This episode, I believe, is going up on the 15th. So that means you have until tomorrow to buy the story bundle. That includes my book, Into the Fire, and 15 other books, actually 16 if you're a newsletter subscriber. And if you pay a baseline of $15, you get all the books in the bundle. And you've got stuff from Christine Catherine Rush, from, I'm trying to read the list here, Brooks Wachtel, Kevin J. Anderson, Paul Wilson, Dean Wesley Smith, Susan Sizemore, I'm not even going to be able to pronounce this person's name, L. Yagi or Jagi Lamplighter.
Okay.
So it's just tons of different books. And my friend Travis Heerman has a book in there. I think we've talked to Travis before, Deathwind. And I love his Ronin books. And so I'm just thrilled to be in this bundle with all these folks. Again, it's for charity. It supports your authors. $15, you get all the books. They're all ebooks. They're DRM free. And it ends tomorrow. So please go buy them.
Yes, and I recommend going to do that because I've done that with story bundles before, and sometimes when Amazon will have like all the John Scalzi books are on sale. Mm-hmm. You know, you might feel like, oh, that's some money to spend right now. But what's great is even if you don't start reading them right away, eventually they're on your Kindle or whatever you're going to read them on.
Yep.
And it's like free books. Like 6 months later, you're like, oh, I have all these books. And it's great. It's a great feeling because you feel like you're getting them for free then. So pull the trigger when you see those bundles and those deals because it's you won't regret it. You'll read them. So
cool.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. We will see you next time.
Thanks, Mo. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.